Blog Talk Radio.
Joined by my main man, my friend, your friend, soon to be everybody's friend. Show some love for Mr. Cool Hand Phil. Phil, how are you, sir?
Man, you give me a great introduction every week. I'm doing fantastic, Terrence. Just looking forward to another great show that you have planned for us.
We definitely do have a good show tonight, Phil, because so much has happened in the sports world since we last spoke. You know what, this past week has been the week of the cheaters because for the second week in a row, NASCAR has penalized the team. This week it was Ryan Newman for illegal tires, and the Falcons and the Browns, well, they were also penalized for rules infractions that they portrayed throughout the NFL season. Now, some big news, Phil, Tiger Woods played Augusta, but it is unclear whether or not he will actually participate in the Masters. Everyone believes that he will. Rick Barnes, head coach at Texas, he's out at Texas, but hey, the very next day he's in at Tennessee, becomes Tennessee's third head coach in 3 years. Let's see if they can hold on to this one. And in the NFL, all the pro days are done for the top quarterback candidates. Mariota, Winston, all their pro days are in the books, and the debate rages on as to who will be the first overall pick between the two of them. But, Phil, you know like I know, the thing that everybody's talking about, the stage is set for this year's Final Four in Indianapolis. The Duke Blue Devils, the Wisconsin Badgers, Michigan State Spartans, which really surprises and shocks shocked a whole lot of people when they made it to the Final Four. And then, of course, rounded out by none other. I said Wisconsin already. Of course, Kentucky Wildcats, excuse me. Rounding out the top the four teams in this year's Final Four. And, Phil, that's where I want the conversation to start. Let's take a look at this field right here, the Final Four. The road that they took to get there, because these Elite Eight games were nothing short of spectacular to get down to these Final Four teams. So let's start there. These teams that made it, the road they got to get there. We'll start here, Phil. When you look back at those the Elite Eight games, I think I probably have already let the cat out of the bag. For me personally, the biggest surprise in the Elite Eight was that Michigan State was there, but then also was able to do away with Louisville, a higher seed. I think Louisville was a 4 seed, Michigan State a 7 seed, to be able to do away with them to make it to the Final Four. That was my biggest shock in the Final Four. Everything else kind of went to chalk. But what about you? What were you surprised about the Elite Eight games leading into the Final Four?
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised at the way that Michigan State played, but after watching them play pretty much every game of the tournament, we shouldn't have been surprised. I mean, just the way that they played, especially to me in the second half, I thought there were several games where they would get behind, especially in the first half or even going into halftime, be behind, and then they just come storming back in the second half. So I was very impressed by their poise, but – you know, I think in their did they win their conference tournament? I think they did, if I'm not mistaken.
The Big Ten, yep, yes. Michigan State did win the Big Ten.
And so the way that they've done things is kind of the way they've done it in the last couple of years, where it takes them a while to get things figured out, and then they come on very strong at the end of the regular season and in the conference tournament. So kind of the history or the way that they've attacked this NCAA tournament is the way they've attacked the conference tournament. So, but I think they're a very good team. I think they are dangerous. They are athletic. They're not very big, especially at the guard position, but I was very surprised by the way that they were able to put things together and put a run in. But again, you know, should we really be surprised? Because this is really Izzo's MO. This is kind of what he does every year. He finds a way, I don't know how he does it, to make a run into the Final Four. And I heard he wasn't in the Final Four last year. Was it? Was Michigan State there? I thought somebody had said either last year when they made it to the Final Four, they were a 7 seed, or it was when they won the national championship. No, I guess it was UConn last year that was a 7 seed and won. Mm-hmm. And I did not remember that. I did not remember UConn being that low of a seed, being a number seven and winning it all. I just do not recall that at all. So I just can't believe I couldn't remember it being that big of an upset and that big of a Cinderella story. But it was some of those Elite Eight games were incredible games. I mean, the one that I enjoyed the most, or I could say disliked the most, was the Kentucky and Notre Dame game. You know I'm not a fan of Kentucky, but man. Oh, man, I mean, that was a fantastic game. And after watching, Notre Dame throughout the tournament, I felt like they would match up best with Kentucky. Just they have athletes all over the court. You know, they're forwards, all of the guards. That center, I think what his name is, August, I think that's his name. But, I mean,
for Notre Dame,
all of those guys were super athletic. And they can, every time they finish at the rim, they're usually above the rim or at the rim, but they really attack the basket. So I felt like they would be able to match up with Kentucky, and they did. I just thought they made some mistakes at the end. Kentucky made some big plays, but I felt like Michigan State made some mistakes. Grant, I think he took some really bad shots the last three possessions. He was trying to take Cauley Stein out on the perimeter and, fadeaway three-pointers. I think the second one was blocked. And then, of course, the third one, I don't think that was a bad shot. I mean, you only have 5 seconds. But the two possessions before that where, the lane was open and, he was taking fadeaway three-pointers and a seven-footer. I just thought those were wasted possessions.
Right.
But, Kentucky is a great team, but I just felt like they could have done some things different to win that basketball game. But that was a phenomenal game.
Definitely. So much to react to and the things that you just said. If you're just joining us and listening to the PO show here on Blog Talk Radio, Big T and Cool Head Phil, you're right at the top in terms of, like I said, it was a shock to me that Michigan State was there, but you're right. It's a Tom Izzo coach team. Why in the world are we surprised that Izzo is still playing basketball in March?
Yeah.
I saw somewhere where it was said or was written. I mean, the calendar should read January, February, Izzo, April, and May. That's the way it should go because he completely, totally owns March when it comes to basketball being played at a high level. So we should not have been shocked and surprised, but I think the element of surprise is that no one can say that Michigan State is the best team in the country. However, all of us would agree that they have the potential to hoist the trophy when it's all said and done in Indianapolis this weekend. So, it could happen. So I agree with you wholeheartedly there. You talk about that Kentucky game with Notre Dame, definitely a lot of drama there. Whether you want to give credit to Calipari or to the Wildcats or not, neither here nor there. This is why I like watching this particular Kentucky team play. every game, whether it was the tournament, the regular season, the SEC tournament, every game that they play in, because they're Kentucky, okay, because they're comprised of these All-Americans, because they're undefeated, every time they lace them up, they're getting that their opponent's very best. Whoever they're going up against knows who they're going up against. They know they're going up against Kentucky. They know they're undefeated. So they know they've got to win this game. They've got to play their very, very best. So that's what they run up against. That's what they run up against every single night. And in spite of that, deal, I love watching them play because they literally, you can see it in every game. Every game that I've watched them play, they break the will of their opponent. And it's just, for me, it's the competitive nature in me. That's the funnest thing for me to watch, is to watch that team transition from, hey, you know what, we're just as good as Kentucky. Hey, you know what, I think we can win this game. Hey, you know what, we got to lead. Hey, wait, what's going on? Wait, what's happening? Hey, we're not scoring points. Wait, we're losing. Oh, my God, we lost. I love to see that transition. And you can see it on the coach's face, and you can see it on the player's face. And for Notre Dame, although they held tough longer than most, but still, once we got around that 4 or 5 minute mark, you could see it. You could see it start to set in that they were overmatched. They were being outplayed. You don't want me to say outcoached, but in fact, they got outcoached down the stretch. And like I said, you could slowly but surely see that confidence start to melt away and erode away and go from we're just as good as Kentucky to who did we think we were thinking we were going to come in and beat this team. I love to watch the kids.
I saw it a little bit different. Now, I know what you're talking about. I've seen other teams do that. You know, they'll have a 5-point lead or 3-point lead mm-hmm. with 5 minutes to go, and then they end up getting beat, you know, by 9, 10, 12 points. But I did not see that one bit against this Notre Dame team. You know, and I really think if that Notre Dame team plays Kentucky 10 times, I mean, I think they could beat Kentucky 4 times. I mean, I thought they really matched up. I never saw them get, you know, disappointed or where, like, a light bulb went off where they thought, man, there's no way we can beat this team. I did not see that at all. And I saw it against other teams in the tournament, you know, that Kentucky has played. But I really felt like Notre Dame could have easily won that game. But it just mm-hmm. goes down to, like I said, the bad shots. I thought even the refs kind of got into play with that where, you know, with Towns, he had such a big game, but August was not allowed to play defense on him at all. You know, I've never seen that. I've never seen a 7-footer get that many foul calls. You know, I think the young man had 2 fouls in the first couple minutes just playing, you know, regular defense. I've never seen a 7-footer or, you know, really 2 7-footers down low not be able to have, you know, a little bit of contact. So, you know, he got in foul trouble early, and for the rest of the game, you know, you could tell that August did not want to pick up any cheap fouls.
Right.
And so, you know, he wasn't allowed to, you know, try to block any shots. So if they got it down low to Towns, you know, Towns knew, hey, you know, he's not gonna pressure me. So I'm just going to go to the basket and score. So, you know, to me, I really felt like the refs kind of impacted that. I would like to see down low where you get away with a little bit more contact. You know, let these guys play. And I think the game could have been different in that respect. And then also Grant, you know, I thought he made, again, some bad decisions with the basketball at the end because, you know, if you take it to the basket, they had so much success, and that was their game plan. As far as taking it to the basket, even if you don't make it, or even if they block the shot, you know, off the backboard, they were sending trailers coming in behind it because they knew that the bigs for Kentucky, they always sell out to block the shot. But whenever they do that, they always leave themselves out of position to make the rebound. And so, you know, you saw how much success they had with putbacks. So I really felt like, you know, maybe Grant at the end of the game should have taken that to the hole. If Cauley-Stein tries to go for the block shot, you know, then you have August that comes around and follows up and gets a basket or you get a foul. So, I really just thought he had got into that groove where, you know, you know, 5 minutes left in the game, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, there's nothing wrong with those shots. You know, you hear the announcer say, oh, you know, they shot that too quick in the shot clock. Well, hey, that's going to happen. You know, you're going to take shots. But whenever you get down to the end, I feel like Grant was not very disciplined. You know, I feel like that's kind of his style of play. And, you know, the coaches are probably fine with it, but you really want to see your point guard make more, I guess you call it, smarter decision, you know, and go for a higher percentage play. And then they missed the free throws at the end. You know, and Kentucky made their two free throws, and, you know, Notre Dame missed theirs. So, I don't know. I just never saw them get down on themselves or have any doubt. I thought, you know, man, if there hadn't been 5 seconds on the shot clock, you know, if there would have been 10 seconds left, you know, I think they could have got a better shot or called a timeout. But I never – I don't know. I just didn't see it the way you saw it as far as any doubt coming in.
Well, and it plays out in different ways, Phil. Different teams, it plays out in different ways. Sometimes it plays out in, you know, that you can physically see it, that they're down, the shoulders are drooping, you know, they have no hustle. But I think with Notre Dame, although they kept trying, I think you saw that the doubt started to play out in the bad shot selection. I think you could see it in the lack of confidence they had in their shot. You just said it, as before, earlier in the game, they were going to the hole at will, literally taking it to Kentucky. And then when it got late, when they had to have buckets, you saw the indecisiveness. You saw the hesitation. You saw the poor shot selection. You saw the pulling the trigger early in the shot clock. All those things, you know, it played out differently with Notre Dame. I'll give you that. But at the end of the day, it's Kentucky's in your head, and you start to second-guess the game plan. You start to second-guess what you can and can't do against them when they turn on. And like I said, I've said it before. I don't know what it is. But I'm telling you, when they get late in the game around that four-minute mark, Calipari, somebody on that bench says something. I don't know what the code word is. I don't know if it's hamburger or whatever it is, but something is said, and they go into lockdown defense, and the other teams, they just don't score when they go into lockdown defense.
I didn't see that. I mean, the last 4 minutes of the game, you know, Notre Dame was still scoring. Now, I think what there could be a little bit of is maybe too much confidence. You know, sometimes players can have too much confidence that, you know, really their ability can't back up. And I think that's what happened with Grant. You know, you had – Andrew Harrison, you know, I think the game was tied or Kentucky may have even been down. But anyway, you know, Harrison hit that long three. And, again, it's not a bad shot if you make it. But, you know, if they would have missed that, you know, which easily he could have missed, you know, we could have said, oh, man, look at Kentucky. You know, they're not, you know, they took that bad shot. But, no, I mean, sometimes you take the shot even if it's bad, but if you make it, then you say, man, what a big shot. So I think Grant had a little bit of that. I don't think it was doubt where they said, oh, you know, the moment is too big. I think Grant felt like, I want to be the hero of this game, so let me take this shot. Let me, you know, set up Cauley Stein and do this shot. And I think that's what got away. It was more of a selfishness, not you know, hey, we're just not matched up for these guys. Because, I mean, I'm telling you, if those guys played again, and I saw it, you know, the whole tournament. When you see Notre Dame play, they are so good, so athletic that everyone can score at the rim. And, again, you saw that in the last 4 minutes of the game. But, you know, that last 50 seconds, it just seemed like, and we've seen players do that, where they say, I'm going to be the man. And, I don't know, it just makes me sick when I see that. I wish they would just play basketball instead of saying, hey, I'm going to be the one that hits the big three. Just play ball. And, if, you know, Jordan, the best player ever, if he got covered, he passed it. You know, so I hate to see when these players think they're too big for the moment to pass the ball. They want to be the hero. I just hated to see that.
Right, definitely. You know, and you said something about Notre Dame. You're right. They are a talented team, and they got players – at every position. You know, we talked about it in the previous week. You know, they're one of the only teams in history to beat Duke and North Carolina twice in the same season. You know, they come in to the ACC for the very first time, and they walk away with the title.
the ACC title at the end of the season, and nobody saw that coming. That's just how good. I mean, you look at the teams. You know, the ACC is the SEC of college basketball. You know, and you look at the teams that they have to go up against night in, night out, in just regular league play, and to say that you beat, you know, Duke and North Carolina. And I'm not talking about a down Duke or a down year for North Carolina either.
Right, remember, yeah.
Duke's the number one seed in this tournament, still playing. But, yeah, they beat them twice during the season, and that's unheard of. So, you know, whether it was the Kentucky factor, whether it was coaching, whether it was nerves, whether it was I want to be the hero, fact remains it was a great game. You're right, could have went either way. Harrison was able to get his free throws there at the end. That was the difference.
Yep.
And to try to, but I agree with you. Who's going to try to shoot a three over a 7-footer when you only needed two? I mean, you know, they could have just got, you know, you didn't need a three, first of all. But to try to shoot a three over a 7-footer, you know, in that part, in that spot, in that situation of the game, I don't know. Probably the other big game was a repeat. Feel from the previous year was that Wisconsin-Arizona and Kaminsky living up to his player of the year status with a huge game, 29 points. I forget how many rebounds, but a strong double-double out of him. And he's kind of laid out the blueprint, Phil, of what he wants to do to Cauley Stein to help his team win this next round. And I said it early in this Kentucky run to the undefeated season that I said the only two teams that I saw that could really challenge them was Virginia because of the defense that they play and Wisconsin because of Kaminsky's game and his ability to stretch the floor and to pull Kentucky's bigs away from the rim. So that's the game that's on tap. And I can't call it. I don't know what's going to happen because if you watch Kentucky, you know what I'm about to say. You don't know what Kentucky team's going to show up in the first half. I know what Kentucky team will show up in the second half. I just don't know which team shows up in the first half. And a team as talented as Wisconsin, I don't think you can spot them a first half of play and then come back and get it in the second half. So that's a difficult one for me to call without knowing which Kentucky team's going to show up.
I mean, to me, it's an easy game to call. I mean, Wisconsin is going to get murdered. Before the tournament started, and again, I admitted I had not watched a lot of college basketball, and a lot of reason for that is the way that Wisconsin-Arizona game went down. I mean, I don't know if you've watched that game, but in the second half, even though Wisconsin was up, I think by, you know, 10 or 12 points, you know, I told my wife, I said, man, Wisconsin is going to get beat because every time they came on the court, the referees blew the whistle every single time and called a foul on Wisconsin. You know, and you could just see what Arizona was doing. They would just immediately attack the basket, and if you just pretended like you were going to play defense, they called a foul. And I hate that because these guards were just completely out of control. You know, they're shooting shots that are hitting the shot clock, have no chance of going in, but they would call a foul just because, you know, the guy is trying to get in his way. And, you know, to me, that's defense. And it's not contact that is really affecting the shot. It's just getting in their way. You know, you may have a little bit of body contact. But anyway, I mean, they shot two free throws every time down the court. But that's why I can't watch basketball, because of games like that where it's just a foul every trip down. But I had not watched a lot of basketball throughout the year, and so I knew that Wisconsin was good. I knew they played in a good conference. I knew they only had like three losses. So I was like, man, these guys have to be good. But I just don't think there's any way they can match up with Kentucky. After watching them play, everything that Wisconsin does well, Kentucky is going to be able to disrupt that. You know, Kaminsky, he's a great player, and I don't think Cauley Stein or Towns would be able to guard him one-on-one because he can stretch the floor. You know, he can pump fake. Once he gets in the lane, he pump fakes and then can pivot. So I think even though he can't jump as high as these guys, I think he'll be able to get baskets. But he's not going to be playing one-on-one. You know, if he tries to go inside, Towns will come over to help, and they don't have the athletes that Notre Dame had. Notre Dame, every player that they had, they can match up with Kentucky's athleticism. Wisconsin does not have that. So once they shut down Kaminsky, you know, you still have Sam Decker. He's probably been probably one of the most fun players to watch this tournament. And but to me, Notre Dame had about three or four Sam Deckers. But Wisconsin, they only have one. So you put your other athletic player on Decker. Well, who else do you have? I mean, that little guard number 24, he's god-awful. And then they have some other guys that can shoot. But, you know, Kentucky is so long, they can cover so much space. You have to have guys that can move without the ball. And that's why Notre Dame has so much success, because those guys can move without the ball. And I just don't think Wisconsin is going to be able to do that. I think they'll get beat by 17 points, something like that. And I picked Wisconsin before the tournament because I knew that they were good, but I really didn't know what style of play that they had. But I just don't think it's going to be close, because I think they're going to put all their attention on Kaminsky and Sam Decker. And, you know, they'll probably hold those guys combined to, you know, 24 points combined, 12 points apiece. And the other guys are not going to be able to pick up the slack. So I see that one getting out of control. And I don't know if there's another team in the Final Four that can match up with Kentucky. I just don't see it. I mean, I don't think Duke is going to be able to do it. I think I think Michigan State of the four teams or the three teams remaining match up best with Kentucky.
Yeah, I picked on my bracket. My bracket has Kentucky playing Duke for the championship with Kentucky winning it. But something that you said there in terms of everything that Wisconsin does well, Kentucky will exploit. At that same token, the one thing that Wisconsin does do extremely well is a weakness for Kentucky, and that's the defensive rebound. If Kentucky has a lackluster effort in protecting the boards, the defensive for them, offensive rebounds, it can be a long night. You know, that was one of the problems that, you know, they were able to answer the bell on that. That was one of the problems that they had in that West Virginia game, or that West Virginia had rather, is they were anticipating, you know, being able to out rebound Kentucky and be able to, you know, get fast offense and then immediately get into their press, but that didn't happen. It's kind of funny when you go back and you look at it. If you're playing, you want to beat the press. You want to beat a pressing team. Just make your shots. That's all you got to do. you make your shots. There's no press to worry about. They don't have an opportunity to get into a rhythm for press. So it was interesting the way that game went. I mean, West Virginia never had the opportunity, because they got beat up on the boards, and Kentucky shot in the first half anyway 61% in the first half. So there weren't a lot of rebounds in the first place to be had. Let's start there. You shoot 61%, and then the rebounds that were there, Collins-Stein and Towns are able to get that taken care of in short order. So that's a spot though, Phil, where Wisconsin could cause some trouble for them. But again, if Kentucky's really in the zone and they're on it, they're, you know, shooting 60% or better, you could forget about it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But again, I just don't think the other guys are athletic enough to crash the board. You know, if they're focusing on the two bigs, you know, I know there's a number 24. He's garbage. I mean, his face just gets on my nerves. Number 21 is a good shooter. And, you know, it's not that he's not athletic, but he just doesn't have the athleticism of, like, the number 24 for Notre Dame or 32 for Notre Dame, you know, those other guys. So I think you can cancel him out a little bit. The only way that I say that they could beat Kentucky is if they had a shooting night like they did against Arizona. That's the only way that they have a shot, is if they can come out and hit, you know, 8 of 9 3-pointers in the second half. But when have you ever seen that happen in the tournament? You know, you never see a team shoot that well and then come back the next game and
exactly.
shoot that well when they really need it. And they're really going to need it against a Kentucky team, because if they're not making those open shots, which I think they can get, you know, if they double team on Kaminsky, you know, he'll be able to take the ball to the side that they want, because he can stretch it out and he's athletic enough to try to go around a big man. And once they do that, he will draw the help that they want to draw. But then when they kick it out, I just don't see them making that many shots to where it's going to put them over the top. And so I just, I just don't think there's any way that they're going to be able to compete, because, you know, Kentucky is so athletic. You know, I think that's what people don't understand. You know, like when you talk about the last 4 minutes of the game, somebody says something that gets them triggered on. But, you know, I think a lot of that is just, it's just built into them. You know, that competitive nature kicks in. And, I mean, even the announcers say that, hey, you know, I've seen Kentucky play on TV, you know, because they cover different conferences. And they'll say, you know, I've seen them on TV, but you cannot understand how big these guys are until you see them in person. And so I think that's what even teams don't realize, is how much room those guys can cover, and that's how they can disrupt you, because, you know, they can cheat and do all of these things, and either that results in a turnover or, you know, they try to kick it out to the open shot, but they can recover so quick because, I mean, these guys are 6'7", you know, arms are long, and, of course, they're athletic. I mean, there's, what, 9 All-Americans on that team. So, I mean, you know they can play basketball. And that's what makes it so tough, that if you do not have athletic people, you know, that if you kick out and then Kentucky tries to recover, if those guys aren't athletic enough to, you know, take it to the other direction, I just don't think there's any way that they're going to be able to outscore Kentucky, because, you know, again, if they're that big on the defensive end, they're that big on the offensive end, and that's offensive putbacks, that's being able to shoot over the top of someone. So, I mean, they just pose a lot of problems. And, of course, I mean, you would expect that you don't end up 38 or 37 and 0 without posing problems for other teams. So, I mean, they're just that big, that athletic. You're going to have to play your best game to beat them, and I just don't see – I don't think you're going to be able to see Wisconsin's best game, because Kentucky is going to exploit them on the defensive end.
Well, and that's a look at the teams, and this is an ongoing conversation that we've been having off the air for some time. So it appears we both are in agreement that Kentucky's the best team left that's still playing. But who is the best coach? I mean, if you've got to take a team, and let's say all things equal as far as the players, you've got to take a team into the Final Four weekend. Who do you want coaching those 5 guys going into the final weekend? Are you going with Izzo? Are you going with Coach K? Are you going with Calipari? And, I mean, don't get me wrong, the Wisconsin head coach is decorated. I mean, he's had a nice run here lately, but it's really not even fair to put him in that category with these other greats. So I'm going to go ahead and help him, allow him to save face, and we're going to just remove him. And we're really talking about Izzo, Coach K, and Calipari, who, you know, Izzo, you know, this is his 7th Final Four that he's going into. We, you know, we talked about it at the beginning of it, and, you know, Coach K with his 1,000 wins this season, I mean, you know, that's not a small feat. There's only a couple of head coaches in the game that have 1,000 wins, but Coach K is one of them. And then, of course, what, you know, Calipari has been able to do, whether you say he's doing it through recruiting or whether he's doing it through a system, whether he's doing it through sideline coach, whatever it is, you know, he's in the process of, I don't even know if you could rightfully so call it a dynasty, because all the members of the dynasty turn over every 1-2 years. So, but it goes without saying, you have to pay attention to what's going on down in Lexington, because they're doing something.
and they're doing it right. So the question to you, Phil, is who do you take in the battle? You're going into Final Four weekend. Who do you want coaching your four? Who do you want coaching your squad?
Well, you know, it's well documented that I'm a Razorback fan, and so I'm probably a little bit biased to that style as far as you have to do more with less. That's what impresses me. You know, Nick Saban, great coach, but, you know, he has the best players. You know, a lot of people say he's the best coach. I mean, and it's hard to argue that, but if it was really his system, then he would have won national championships at Michigan State. But he couldn't do it, you know, because he didn't have the players. So it's a combination. It's the system with the players. But I'm more inclined to go with, to me, what impresses me is doing less with more. So that's Tom Izzo. You know, to me, he takes lesser talent, but with his coaching, he gets his guys to play, and they're able to find weaknesses of the other team, manipulate those weaknesses, and then it turns into – extra wins, and they get longer runs in the tournament. Because, you know, I think I saw a stat where each of those seven Final Four runs, like Izzo has been a number five seed or lower. And I took that to mean, you know, sometimes I get confused when they mean lower, if they mean higher. But I took that to mean that it was a five seed or worse. And so to me, that is impressive that you can take less and do more. I mean, because if I said, Terrence, what's the first thing you think about when I say the 1992 USA Dream Team? You know, nobody says, oh, man, that Chuck Daly, he did a great job with them. No, I mean, because it's more about the players, you know, so it's not so much that Chuck Daly did a great job. You just had superior talent, and that's always my thing with Kentucky. I just feel like they have superior talent, so – it's not like they're overachieving. They're doing what really you would expect to do. So it's hard for me to say, man, that Calipari is doing a fantastic job with those nine All-Americans. You know, what else do you expect? Everyone else has two All-Americans. So I think what Izzo does, to me, the way he makes those runs, that is very impressive because he's doing less, or he's doing more with less.
Right. Right, and I definitely hear you. It's hard to bet against Michigan State or Izzo, so I definitely could respect and understand that. But for my money, it'd just be hard to go away from Coach K and everything that he's accomplished, you know, in his career and everything that he's done in terms of building a program at Duke. You know, one of the things you mentioned Nick Saban, and one of the things that we always say about Nick Saban, especially when it comes to bowl season, is, you know, you don't want to face Nick Saban when he's had a week off to prepare, or, you know, he's had 30 days to prepare. And that's one of the things that Kentucky definitely does have going for him. You know, I think if Notre Dame could have gotten Kentucky on the back half of a two-game weekend, I think that game would have went differently because they were coming, you know, off of a significant rest, and that was the first game of the weekend instead of their second. You know, I think that has a lot to do with it. And so going forward, when they go up against Wisconsin, the fact that they've got that week layover, that's going to give Coach Cal plenty of time to come up with a game plan, a defensive game plan and how he wants to play it, and give him a chance to coach his team up. But, yeah, if I'm picking between the three, you go ahead. You take Izzo. I'll take Coach K all day, every day. And quite honestly, just from his resume alone, you know, 1,000 wins puts him in, a, you know, some rarefied air. So it's not just me saying Coach K is better. Statistically, we're saying Coach K would be better.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really – if you got into an argument and somebody put Coach K as one of the top coaches of all time, I mean, I would have a tough time arguing that, especially when you look at the players that he's had. I mean, now, don't get me wrong, he has had very good players, but, you know, I think he's had a different type of player. I think he's recruited a different player, and I don't think his players have gone on to have as much success in the NBA as like a Dean Smith or some,
right.
you know, some even newer coaches on the scene now. He's had good college players, but I don't think he's had just the type of talent that can go on to the next level and dominate. And I don't know who you would say has been his best player of all time as far as a pro career. Maybe it was Elton Brand. I don't know who you would put up there. But the only other player that I think could rival that would be a coach that I despise, and that's Bobby Knight. But Bobby Knight, he accomplished a ton. I think he has 3 national championships, and I can name 2 players off of those teams, you know, Isaiah Thomas and Steve Alford. And I think they were on different teams. So then you have a 3rd team, you know, that I couldn't name anyone on, the undefeated season. So, I mean, I think Bobby Knight is up there too, even though I would leave him off the list just out of spite. So, I don't know. I really think Coach K has done a lot. Even, you know, I heard this year he released a player from the program. The guy's been coaching like 40 years. That is the first player that he has ever had to kick off a team. I mean, to me, that's the most amazing stat, that's the type of guy that you recruit, and once you get them there, you have made every single player buy into that system. You know, they've never been, you know, they're beyond reproach. They, you know, never been in trouble in the NCAA, like infractions or anything like that. So, I mean, Coach K definitely I have a lot of respect for, but when it comes to the tournament, you know, I'm sure Izzo has been bounced in the first or second round, but, you know, Duke has been bounced before as a number 2 seed, or, you know, they leave the first weekend or the second weekend. So, you know, you can use that against Coach K a little bit. But Izzo, to me, he just is able to put together these magical runs that just really defy logic.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not going to go wrong. No matter who you pick. And you bring up a very good point. I agree with you. You had mentioned this to me last week, and I hadn't even thought about it until you said it. But it is interesting, for whatever reason, that Coach K can coach him up in college and have some of the best college teams in history. But these guys don't – it just doesn't translate to the pros. You know, I guess his best pro alum would have to be Grant Hill – And you had to put Shane Battier, you know, because love him, like him or not. I mean, Battier, of course, he's got rings with Miami, but Battier played what eight seasons. I mean,
longer than that, I'm sure.
I mean, he was a serviceable player, I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, he made it. You know, into the league and contributed on teams for a good, and like I said, he's got a ring or two. So I think he's probably got two. Yeah, he was on Miami for both of those, so he's got 2 rings. So those two, yeah, Grant Hill and Shane Battier, that's probably the most noteworthy players that he's had that went pro. And of course, you know, Coach Cal's list of pro athletes is too long to even get started. And Izzo, you know, aside from a team, Cleese, and he didn't really make it. I mean, he only he got drafted, but he never really became a factor. I can't think of anybody else from Michigan State, at least not out of the Tom Izzo era, that did anything.
I can't either.
So that is interesting. I don't know what that means. I mean, obviously, it's a recruiting aspect, I think, but maybe it speaks to your original point about being able to do less do more. I'm sorry, be able to do more with less. But I looked at my bracket field after the slate was set, and I made a strong comeback because, like I had mentioned to you, I had picked Notre Dame to get that far. But I did have them losing, you know, right where they did. But I actually, my brackets are looking pretty strong. The only thing I don't have, which nobody has, so it doesn't hurt me, is Michigan State. You know, nobody saw Michigan State going to the Final Four. But I had all the other teams picked correctly. So I think I have pretty much locked it up at the office pool that I will be our bracket challenge winner at work, even in spite of that miserable start with all the upsets that we had. I got my the ship righted itself somewhere around 32 teams, and I've been good ever since. How about yourself? How's your bracket looking?
Oh, man, it's disgusting. I mean, it's cruel and unusual, my bracket. The right side of the bracket, I mean, it started out okay, and then, you know, it just got bad really quick. I didn't do one of those online, you know, sign up or playing with buddies. It's even worse. Right. I did one against my wife. So after, you know, all these first rounds, you know, we're down to the final four. We are tied up at 36 games apiece. We, you know, we've picked 36 winners apiece. I have three of the final four teams. She only has one, but she's going to beat me because she has Kentucky winning it all. And I just don't think there's another team that can get in their way. We have a 30-minute massage on the line, so it looks like, you know, I'm going to have to fork out that 30-minute massage because, you know, the only chance that I have is if Wisconsin wins, because I had Villanova playing Wisconsin in the championship game, so I'm done. You know, I got Duke getting beat this weekend, so if Wisconsin can't pull off the miracle – then I'm done, man. So I'm really hurt about that. But here, you know, what I think is interesting is kind of like fantasy football. I think that has really driven a lot of interest for the NFL. And, you know, so even if you don't have a specific team, you can really get involved in the NFL because you can pick your team. Do you think that choosing these brackets and picking the brackets creates interest in the tournament? Because I think it does, you know, because I'm watching this bracket and I'm following along, you know, and I'm in this competition and I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, I have to have this team win or, you know, I'm going to get behind two games or whatever it is. But do you think that drives some of the interest in the game, or do you think it's just the game itself is what drives the interest?
Well, the brackets definitely increase the exposure of the game, and it brings the game as a vehicle. It takes the game to people that would otherwise not be bothered. But past that, it's the game that's making the game more interested. We've already talked about it. This has been, whether we talk about the 3-14 upsets that we saw early, or whether we're talking about these unbelievable individual performances that we've seen. But it's the game itself that's making the game more interesting, even when the game is almost unwatchable. You talked about all the disparaging files. I forget which game it was. Actually, I remember. In the West Virginia-Kentucky game, I forget the exact numbers, so forgive me, but we took a look at all of the fouls that were called versus all the minutes that were played. And there was when it was all said and done, basically it came out, there was a foul called, a foul and a half called every minute of play.
God.
For every, yeah, I mean, that's almost unwatchable.
Mm.
You know, that in and of itself is almost unwatchable. But, you know, I said that to say this. It's the game itself that holds our interest or loses our interest. Because I can tell you, if every game I watched had a foul every minute and a half, I'd eventually stop watching too. So, you know, yes, to answer your question, yes. Does the tournament help? Does the bracket challenge, does it help? Sure, it helps. I wouldn't say it makes the game more interesting, but it definitely serves as a vehicle to take the game to more people that otherwise wouldn't. You know, let me put it to you this way. I'm going to put it to you like this. If it weren't for the tournament, you know, one could say if it weren't for the tournament, we never would have heard of Davidson University.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm playing devil's advocate and I'm being honest, no, Steph Curry is the reason that we've heard of Davidson and his unbelievable play. So that's my end of the day, though. It's the play on the court that holds our interest and keeps us exciting. And keeps us coming back for more, you know.
Yeah, And that's true. I mean, because, you know, once you fill out the bracket, I mean, there was games that I was watching, even though, you know, I probably didn't have a lot of interest, but I wanted to see who was going to win because, you know, I'm following along with my bracket. But if the games are just garbage every year, then, you know, there's absolutely no way you would even fill out a bracket the next year. So, I mean, yeah, I think they kind of go hand in hand. But I just thought that was interesting. If there's games that I'm watching just because I'm like, man, you know, I'm trying to win this bracket challenge. But, yeah, you are right. I mean, when you have those sidebar stories like the Hunters at Georgia Southern and, you know, all these guys that you can kind of follow along and you get to see the back story, that's the true story, and that's what really, you know, holds the attention.
Yeah, look, it's a great product. Even though the refs are doing everything they can to make it a worse product, I think, it's probably the best tournament, all-around tournament that I've seen. And that brings me to this question that I have for you, Phil. And we kind of talked about it a little bit early on, but I want to go in a little deeper. And that is the work of the selection committee. When we talk about the upsets that we had, we talk about how good the games were, are we really saying that the selection committee is getting better at seeding and giving us these matchups that are creating good basketball, or is it just the flat-out luck of the draw?
Well, I think it's more – I think the seeding I really don't think they're trying to get a number 1 versus 16 or a number 2 versus 15 and so down the line. I think they're trying to give you the best matchup. And so, you know, whenever you go into, you know, these tournaments and, you know, you look at, oh, this team is a number 8 seed, I think you have to ignore all of that because I think what the committee is trying to do, and again, I'm on board with it. I'm okay with it. But I think they're trying to pick teams that are going to have better games instead of saying, you know, this team is really a number 3, but I think they'll turn that team into a number 5 just so they can face off against a number 11 that they match up better against. So I think they are getting better at creating these matchups. But, you know, once you get past number 1, number 2, and probably even number 3 seeds, you know, I think you can just throw – everything out the window, you know, because you see some teams, you know, like a no-name school be a number 10, and then you have like a UCLA at number 11.
There's
just times where they put those teams that come from major conferences at a lower seed just so you can get the better matchups across the board. And, you know, a lot of times they do things like this year with Wichita State facing off with Kansas. You know, I think that stuff is planned out where they say, okay, what is going to, you know, garner the most interest in these games? And, again, this is a business. You know, you want to give people the best games possible. You don't want the first weekend to be a snooze fest. So I think they really ignore which teams are better and deserve to be where they are. I think they look at it more, what can we do to give the fans – the best games, and they go from there, and that's their reasoning, and I'm all for it.
Right. You know, you did mention the one anomaly in this whole deal was UCLA. you know, I don't think they deserved a spot in the tournament, and I definitely think the bad goaltending call that moved them on to the second round, I definitely feel like that should have been somehow corrected and rectified. That that UCLA should have been there, I guess is my point. UCLA shouldn't have been there. I can't even remember that goaltending call now. I can't even remember who that was against. It was early on.
SMU?
SMU. And you know, Larry
Brown.
For all the conspiracy theories, you know, the fix is still in on keeping Larry Brown out of a deep run. You remember last year they had, you know, 28 wins and couldn't even get in. This year they go about to handle their business the right way, you know, win their conference to get their automatic bid. They get in and they get robbed on a ridiculous 3-point goaltending call when the ball didn't even hit the rim. But anyway,
I saw that replay in passing. I heard, you know, people say, but I didn't think they knew much about basketball, you know, but people at work that said that it was one of the worst plays ever. Was it that bad? I mean, was the ball in the cylinder or was it not?
Yeah, it depends on which camera angle you went to that you chose. But the two camera angles that I saw, it looked like to me, and I'm not saying clearly. I mean, you had to see it slow down, slow motion, see it two or three times. But what it looked like to me is that the ball, although from its trajectory it was heading down, but it was not going to hit the rim in any shape, form, or fashion.
Okay.
But I mean, but that's, you know, that's my 10 cents. That's what I saw. But yeah, moral of the story: best NCAA tournament I can recall in a long, long time. I thoroughly enjoyed the games thus far. This Final Four weekend is going to be unbelievable. Here's something, Phil, that I just saw that kind of came across the. Came across the ticker tape here. You've got a lot of people that are in town for this Final Four. Pat Hayden, as you may recall, is one of the members of the college football committees, playoff committees. He was scheduled to go to Indianapolis for the Final Four, and he has decided to boycott. I don't know if you've heard what's going on. Well, you've had to, because I think Arkansas is next. Indiana recently passed a bill called the Freedom Act, I think is what it's called, but essentially it gives proprietors, restaurants, for example, to deny service to anyone based, for any reason whatsoever. Primarily the bill seems like it came into play because of the owner of the establishment could deny service to homosexuals if he, in fact, so decided to. I know you're asking me, where is all this going? Well, Pat Hayden's son is a gay male, and Pat Hayden has said he is boycotting the festivities this weekend in Indianapolis for the Final Four weekend as a protest because of the new law that Indiana passed. And like I said, if you haven't heard it, people will be losing their mind because I think Arkansas drafted the same bill again today. So here we are. I know you hate it when sports, when teams, when athletes, coaches, players, when they try to get political. But I'm just giving you a peek under the tent because what happened here, I think you're heading that way for another big political fight that's got to be fought from members of the sports world and not members of Congress.
No, first of all, I'll say about Hayden, I mean, I'm not going to miss him. I don't think anyone else is going to miss him. And if that's his choice, then that's fine. Whenever these things get, to me, it's blown out of proportion. I still haven't made up my mind on that because I do not agree with the homosexual lifestyle. But, you know, I think that that agenda is made, or that issue is made into a bigger deal than it should. I mean, let's say somebody came into your restaurant that you knew was a drunk, or you knew was had beat their wife before. You would never consider not serving them. So I don't know why we, as Christians, turn this into a bigger issue. You know, to me, I think you just show them as much love as you want. Now, if they ask your opinion, say, no, you know, I really don't agree with your lifestyle. I wouldn't want my son or daughter to grow up in that lifestyle, but hey, you know, we love you guys, and I want y'all to come in, you know, here, and we can talk. But, you know, but no, I don't agree with you, and I'm not going to let, you know, my family go, you know, my kids go to your house and you influence them. But, you know, hey, we can all, you know, come in, you know. But I don't know why the community plays that up. But man, I think it's because that lifestyle is just thrown into our face on a daily basis. You know, where people celebrate it. So I think that's where it comes in. You have to have that equal backlash whenever it's just constantly thrust in your face. And I heard that there was bakeries in Indiana where a straight guy came to do, and they wouldn't serve him. So, to me, this bill has some merit because, I think you can see persecution for Christians in the future. I think there's an NFL player that he spoke out on that recently. Mm-hmm. But, I think you could see that in the future where if you believe that homosexuality is wrong, you could get, they could get turned back in your face. You could be persecuted for that belief. So, I see merits on both sides, but, I just really don't think we as Christians should have more of a loving attitude toward the gay community, even if you don't agree with it. But I think also the gay community and people need to be more understanding that if you don't agree with it, that's their choice, and it's not hate if you don't agree with it. Just don't agree with it. So I think both sides need to probably do a little bit better.
Well, no doubt it's one of those situations that's going to get worse before it gets better. I just, the part that just blows my mind in 2015 that we're still talking about exclusion. We're still talking about denying a certain group of people or individuals based on something that, that shouldn't be based on. Not based on that they're a danger to themselves or a danger to the community. Not based on that they are have broken the law in any shape, form, or fashion. So, it's just amazing to me, like I said, 2015, that we're still talking about exclusion and excluding certain groups of people based on, their thoughts, beliefs, what have you. Well, hey, that pretty much does it for this week's show. Then listen to the PO Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you like what you've heard and you want to hear this show and all others, by all means, don't hesitate to check us out on iTunes. Hey, we're a great follower on Twitter, too. That's at PO Show Radio. And if you're really bored, got a couple of great stories lined up for you over on POShowRadio.com. Check out the latest as far as Rick Barnes being fired from Texas, yet being hired by Tennessee. And also hear Chris Webber called out Kentucky's Willie Cauley-Stein, saying that he would not start in the NBA. Again, that does it for this week's show. Feel free to join us again next week, same time, same place, where we will do it all again right here on Blog Talk Radio. This has been the PO Show with Big T and Cool Hatfield. Good night.